We're doing the book of Koheles. We're up to, it's called the 7th chapter, the 10th Pasuk. The messages we had seen previously about the wise who think about their passing, the fools who are always focused about having a good time. It's the recommendation of Shlomo HaMelech not to listen for the praise of the fools because it's unpredictable, like the thorns under the pot. You never know when they're going to make noise, when they're going to be quiet. A person has to realize that you look long term, you look at what's going to happen in the end. People who are patient, so in the long run, you can work with them. People who are unpredictable, in the long run, it backfires. And finally, Shlomo HaMelech warned us for ourselves to be careful not to be quick to anger. The fools are quick to express their anger, whereas the wise people think it through before they react. And now we're continuing with Pasuk Yud. Al tomar me haya shehayamim arishonim hayu tovim me'ele. A person shouldn't say, what happened? I remember the 50s. Things were so much better then. Shehayamim arishonim, the first days, the previous years were so much better than now. What happened? Ki lo mechochmah sha'alta al zeh. It doesn't stem from your wisdom that you ask this. If you'd really be wise, then you'd understand that there's a reason why things were better. It's interesting that this goes back how many thousands of years, how many millennium, and Shlomo HaMelech is saying the same thing people are saying today. A person has to realize, if you're good people, so then you have, there's a certain blessing that comes with it. So, if we recognize that Hashem is running the world, then there's a reason why certain generations had certain blessings and certain generations did not. By the way, we are probably the most blessed generation in a few millennium. The amount of blessings that we have with abundance of food and medical care and the capacity of people to make ends meet. We look at someone, we say he's poor. What do we mean he's poor? We mean he lives in a small house. He still might have running water. Maybe he does or does not have electricity. But there are so many things he does have for free. You know, you could walk into a mall and have heat. You could go to a public bathroom and have running water for free. There are so many things that are available for free. But at any rate, Shlomo HaMelech says it's not an intelligent thing to look back and say, why were things so much better then? There's a reason why things were better then. If they were better, then obviously they deserved it. So the question here is, what's the stress and what Shlomo HaMelech is saying? Is Shlomo HaMelech stressing philosophically, it's not an intelligent thing to look back and say, why were things better? If they were better, then they deserved it. So that's I think, the obvious understanding of the Pasuk. Or maybe Shlomo HaMelech is also saying that much of our lives are a product of what we do. And so to look back and say, why were things better then? Well, you got to ask yourself that. Lo mechochma sha'alta al zeh. It doesn't stem from wisdom. And if that's what Shlomo is alluding to, so then this is really a reference to one of the most common human maladies. And that is that we very often, we dig our own grave and we're unrelenting. We are unwilling to see it. And we continue doing it. So you look back and you say, why were things better then? There's a guy I know who keeps training. It's pretty amazing. The guy keeps training, but he keeps training for different positions. He had an excellent position and he was making an excellent living. He was living a respectful life. And then he decided he needs a change. And he went from position to position. And every year or two he gets training. He's certified in so many fields. And he really works. He did one thing, he did another thing, he did a third thing. And he has excellent expertise and he's very skilled. But he keeps switching jobs. He keeps switching positions, and so he never grows. And so he never understands, why can't he make ends meet? Why is everything backfiring on him? Why is it that once upon a time it was so easy for him to make ends meet? Well, maybe he should look at himself. I mean, there's a reason. There is a reason. We like pointing a finger outwardly and saying the problems are out there, whereas we should look at ourselves and say, yeah, maybe I'm doing something different, and that's why the products are different. There's another malady that plagues people. It's called diversification. You guys probably heard about it. That people have a company or they have a skill which is super successful. And after they've made many millions, they decide they have to diversify. So they go and they take all that hard-earned money and they invest in something they know very little about. And then they lose. And they lose some more and then they lose some more. There have been many times where I begged people, don't do it. You don't know what you're getting yourself into. And they'll explain to me why it's so simple. Nothing's so simple. And look at all those other people who made money in this field. Right. But maybe all the money's already been made. So this is a mistake I see people making over and over again in their lives. People enter the stock market, they know nothing about it. But everyone else is making money in the market. Okay, and when do most of these people enter? When it's about to crash. Same thing with the housing market, same thing with gold and silver. There are many areas where people look around and say, look at how much money people made in this. Right, they did make it. That doesn't mean there's room to make it now. Maybe there is, but maybe not. And if you know nothing about it, so I know people who do this all the time. They have an excellent position, they make excellent money, and then they lose it because they diversify. There's a top investor who coined the term. He said, don't call it diversification, call it diversification. Because you're taking something good and you're spreading it out to things you know nothing about. So people enter this cycle where they look back and say, why was it better back then? Well, maybe the problem is in something that we changed. We're doing something different, so the products are different. But again, people don't like looking at things that way. Top Pasuk Yud Aleph. Tova Chochma im Nachalam. Wisdom together with a heritage, together with an inheritance, is very good when they go together. V'yoter l'ro'e ha-shamesh. And wisdom, v'yoter l'ro'e ha-shamesh. V'yoter, and wisdom is beneficial. L'ro'e ha-shamesh, to all creatures, all who see the sun. Yeah, that's the ro'e ha-shamesh is another way of saying anyone under the sun. So previously he had said, where does wisdom help us? The wise man dies just like the less intelligent one. But here he's saying no. Tova chokhma im nachala. One understanding in the pasuk is, if you're going to get an inheritance, you better get wisdom with it. Tova chokhma im nachala. It's good when wisdom comes along with an inheritance. Because if a person has an inheritance and he doesn't have the intelligence of how to guide that inheritance, so then he's going to lose it all. And that can happen very quickly. So that's one understanding in the pasuk. Another understanding is, Tova Chochma, over here, like in all of Koheles, Chochma is a reference to the wisdom of Torah. The wisdom of Torah goes well with financial strength. If you have good finances and wisdom of Torah, that's a good partnership. V'yoter l'roe ha-shamesh. And a person should be careful when he speaks to people who are roe hashamish, who have seen a lot under the sun. A person should be even more careful to speak to them with humility. What sometimes happens is a guy comes to yeshiva and he's learned, and then he comes home and he sees his great grandmother who doesn't know the first thing about Judaism. And then when they start talking, so he feels like he's a big knacker because he knows. Chazal taught us, if someone's been around, the mere fact that they've lasted this difficult thing called life is reason enough to have respect. And being that they've seen so much under the sun, listen to them. I remember when the market crashed in 2008. So I was talking to someone. I didn't have any money in the market. I was watching as a bystander. But I said to someone, I don't see how the economy is going to build itself back up. I mean, things are so severe here. I don't know if the currencies are going to last. Now, in all honesty, if I look at it logically, I ask the same question today. I wonder if the American currency and the Japanese currency and the Chinese currency and the euro, I wonder if they're going to be able to last. Because you look at it and you say, how's it going to work? So I was just commenting this to a friend of mine who's much older than me, old enough to be my father. And he has kids who are older than me. And he said to me, look, I've seen every crash. I mean, not every crash, but I've seen crashes in my day. And every time they say the same thing. To those who are inside the crash, it looks like the whole world is destroyed. And to those outside, they keep working, and the world goes on. And some companies go up, and some companies go down, and somehow the world keeps going, believe it or not. You know, and the currencies are still around most of the time. So, we're now standing 5 years later, and so far the world's still around. I mean, I think so. So, v'yoter l'roe ha-shamesh. One has to have more humility when he speaks to people who have seen a lot around, who have seen a lot under the sun. They've seen good, they've seen bad. So here Shlomo HaMelech is advising us, according to the Targum, he's advising us the respect a person should have for someone just because they've been around. Now that's irrespective of what Torah they've kept. Okay. Pasuk Yud Bet. Ki b'tzel ha-chokhmah b'tzel ha-kasef. So the first understanding of the pasuk is ki b'tzel ha-chokhmah, in the shadow of wisdom, b'tzel ha-kasef. That's the shadow of money. So that's a very difficult shot in the pasuk. Anyway, I know geniuses. I know someone who invented something for IBM that they made millions off of. He didn't make millions. Ross Perot was very smart. He was very lucky that his company was not willing to adopt the changes he wanted, and he was actually forced to develop his own company, and that's what made him rich. But initially, he offered it to the company he was working under. Now, if they would have accepted his offers, they would have been rich, and he would have been a good worker. He would have gotten a nice bonus. He wouldn't have been rich. Wisdom doesn't always grant riches, and riches doesn't always come with wisdom. Sometimes it's a matter of luck. But here, Rashi learns that wisdom is a good prelude to riches. Meaning, IQ can help a person get rich. That's interesting. You know, that there are so many instances where people get rich and they don't have so much of an IQ. I would have thought it's more luck. And he's saying, no, you should know the shadow of wisdom and the shadow of money go hand in hand. It is common that a person can be very smart and that could lead him to riches. Another interpretation of the pasuk is that being in the shadow of wisdom is like being in the shadow of riches. Meaning, what does wealth afford a person? Possibilities. when a person has the financial means, then there are many doors that open in front of him. Well, you know what? Wisdom can open doors as well. Sometimes if you know how to talk, you can get there. A few years ago, it was a Shabbos, and Friday afternoon, just before Shabbos, one of the kids had a swelling in their gums. They had an infection in one of their teeth, and the doctors were concerned because it was the upper teeth, so they were concerned it was, high up there, and they didn't want the swelling to spread towards the brain. They said they want him hospitalized for Shabbos and on intravenous antibiotics. And then they kept us there through Sunday. Ordinarily, my wife would be with the kid because it's more comforting to be with a mother, but my wife had just given birth, so they didn't want the baby in the hospital, so I was with him for Shabbos. Okay, it was a very special Shabbos. I learned a lot from that Shabbos. Extraordinary. One of the things that happened was Matzei Shabbos, I was pacing the halls after he fell asleep, and I see someone standing in the halls, a multi-millionaire. The guy has a private jet, and he's got hospitals that he's in charge of. And the guy's really super wealthy from the U.S., and he's standing there pacing the halls. So I say to him, look, I know you're new here, and you're not from the country. Maybe I could help you. So he says, yeah, I don't know, maybe you can. My grandson just underwent an operation. We paid the surgeon tens of thousands of dollars to take him personally for the kid. And now there are certain questions the doctors have. And the doctor, even though we paid him a ton of money, isn't coming to the phone, and he's in charge of the kid. So this man is standing there, and he's got he's got his guards next to him, and he's got his, the whole entourage. And they're all sitting on their iPhones, on the internet, trying to make wheels turn. Maybe they'll get the prime minister to move something. Maybe they'll get, how could it be that, his grandson just underwent an operation, and he has a question, and the guy's not coming to the phone. So he's standing there, and you see a whole team working at 11:30 at night, and I'm thinking, is the prime minister going to get out of bed? Is anyone going to really lift a finger for this guy at this hour? But he's trying, and he's got his contacts in the U.S., and he's connected in hospitals there, and everyone's working there. So I said to him, why don't you give me the name of the doctor and the name of your grandson, and let's see, maybe we could get something moving. So he gives me the name, and I leave, and they're all standing there working. And I go, like a simple Jew, I go to the secretary sitting behind the desk, and I say, look, there's a sad story here. This is the kid. This is the situation. Everyone's nervous out there. I know you don't want to bother the doctor. It's the middle of the night. But the flip side is, this was a very dangerous operation. And the truth is that the doctors on call are not sure if it's really right or not. You understand, the grandfather is in medicine, and he's concerned. And the doctors aren't giving him, answers with confidence. They're also not sure if the child is where he should be after the operation. It could be his life's in danger. So I know it's like going out on a limb, but maybe you can find a way to help me. So she says, of course I'll help you. She gives me the doctor's home number. She gives me his cell number. She gives me all the information I need. So I'm not about to call the doctor. I'm not the patient. I come back to him like 2 minutes later and I say, you want his cell number? He said, sure, he's not listed. No one will give me the number. I said, fine, here's the cell number. You want the house number? Sure, I want the house number. Okay, I give him both numbers and I walk away. Goodbye. So he's calling senators and he's trying to get the wheels turning from, and you go and you try to talk to the person humanely and you get all the information, in under 5 minutes he had all the information. Shlomo HaMelech says, sometimes if you use your head, you can get to the same place that money will get you. With money, maybe you can get certain wheels to turn. And sometimes if you use your head, you can get those wheels to turn just as well. V'yitron da'at ha'chokhma t'chayeve aleha. He says wisdom is even better than money. Because when you have wisdom, then wisdom can sometimes save a life. Whereas sometimes money just won't save you. And there are many stories. Maybe the most famous is Rav Nachman's story. You guys know the story of Rav Nachman? The guy with the sword. Rav Nachman has a famous story. I'll keep it really, really short. It's a long story, but I'll try to keep it really short. The king gets dressed up. He wants to see what his people are like, and he goes around and he sees one house where there's light shining out of the house and there's happiness. And he comes and he looks through the window and he sees a person who's very, very happy. And he knocks on the door and the guy lets him in. And he talks to the guy and he finds out what the guy makes a living out of. And he's thrilled to see that the guy is so happy. And then the king leaves and he goes back to his palace. And he makes a decree that whatever the guy's livelihood was, let's say he was a woodcutter, no cutting wood for the next few days. He goes out, he gets dressed up again, he comes to the guy's house, he sees the same light radiating from the house, and the guy's happy and everything's good. So he knocks on the door, and the guy lets him in, and he goes in and he sits and eats with the guy, and in the meal he asks him, hey, how are things going? So the guy says, it's interesting, you know, last time you were here, I made my living off of, let's say, cutting wood. I don't remember the details of the story, but he says, let's say it was cutting wood. And then the king came out with this decree, no cutting wood. So I really didn't know how I'd afford this meal that you're taking part of, but I went and I found a job in drawing water. So I'm making up the details. I don't remember what each job was. I'm not sure it makes too much of a difference in the story. So the king says, wow, that's great. And he doesn't know he's talking to the king, right? The king's all dressed up. So fine, the king leaves, goes back to his palace, puts out a decree, no cutting wood or drawing water. Okay, comes back to the guy's house, looks through the window, sees the guy's happy and he's eating and knocks on the door. The guy invites him in, he's very warm, he enjoys the meal. During the meal, he says, gee, buddy, how you doing? So the guy says, interesting you should ask. Last time you were here, I was drawing water, right? So then, lo and behold, the next morning, there's a decree, no cutting wood or drawing water. So, okay, I didn't know what to do. So I went around looking, and I saw that people needed someone to pull the weeds out of their field. So I went and I got a job pulling weeds out of the field. And thank God, look, I'm doing okay. You're even enjoying the meal together with me. Fine, the king goes home, puts out a decree. No cutting wood, no drawing water, and no pulling weeds. Okay, and the story goes on and on until finally the guy gets a job in the king's army. Okay? So he gets a job in the king's army, and the king tells his officers, now even though you'll promise him pay, and ordinarily you pay every day, you're not paying him till the end of the month. Okay? He comes to the guy's house, and he sees the guy's having a lavish meal, and everything's happy and great. So he comes in, and he sits down, and eats, and he talks to the guy, and he asks the guy, how you doing? So the guy says, funny, I got a job by the king, and for some reason, they weren't willing to pay me. Ordinarily, they weren't willing to pay me. Craziest thing. So the king looks at him and says, wow, interesting. Where'd you get the money for all this meal? So he says, look, I'll tell you. Most of what I'm doing for the king, I'm walking around. I'm not really fighting any wars right now. So what I did was, I took the blade of my sword, I cut it off, I sold it for the metal, and I walk around. No one sees what's in the sheath. All they see is the handle to the sword. So I'm walking around. I look like I'm a guard like everyone else. When I get paid, I'll replace the sword. But for now, like this, you know, I'm making ends meet until the king will pay me. So the king goes back to his pals, and he decides this time he's gonna get him. So he sends word to the guy and his officer, and he tells the sergeant, I want you to send him before me. And the soldier is standing there, and he doesn't recognize the king. The king is standing in all his regal attire. And the king says, you, the new officer, we here in the palace have found this person to be guilty and deserving of the death penalty. We're going to count till 10, and then I want you to walk over. And if you want, you can say something, but you're going to have to take out your sword and cut off his head. So the man is standing there trembling, and the soldier, they're counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, they hit 10. And now the soldier's entitled to say something. The king is sitting back watching, and the soldier looks and he says, Your Majesty, I have never in my life killed anyone. But if Your Majesty has decreed that I should kill someone, how could I refuse? I'm your soldier. So I will turn my eyes to heaven. I know your majesty has done the very best to verify if this man was innocent or guilty. Now, there's one detail I forgot to mention. He had, in order that the sheath take shape, he had attached, according to some versions, a wooden sword, a wooden blade. According to other versions, a blade made out of wax. So we'll say he has a blade made out of wax. So the sheath is full, and the handle is the regular metal handle. And he says, "Your Majesty, being that you're the king, obviously you've done your very best to verify if this man is deserving of the death penalty. We are all humans, and I would not question the king. On the other hand, there's a God in heaven who I have to answer to. And so I'm going to pray to God in heaven. I will draw my sword to slice off this man's throat. And if it be so that the man were innocent in spite of all our verifications, then as I draw my sword, it will the blade of the sword will turn into wax." And with that, he quickly draws his sword, and we all know the continuation of the story. So, you see, I always felt that that story is the personification of this pasuk. Just like money can help a person, wisdom can help a person, right? B'tzela chokhma, b'tzela kasef. Being in the shadow of wisdom is like being in the shadow of money. V'yitron da'ata chokhma techiya be'alea. But wisdom takes you a step further. Because wisdom can save a person's life where money can't. Meaning, the guy balanced this pasuk. On the one hand, he used his brilliance, but he used it always to make money, right? The whole story shows how a person will have challenges, and it seems like every plan he tries to make in life, I think Rav Nachman was trying to tell us that you can view all of life this way. God is the king. Every time you think you have a solution, suddenly, hey, wait a second, that didn't work. You try another solution, that didn't work. Life doesn't seem to flow smoothly. It's as though every step of the way is not going right. Everything I try, you know, there was the Ibn Ezra. He lived a little before Nachmanides, Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. And he was so poor, he wrote poetry, he wrote his commentary on the Tanakh, and he once wrote a song. And he said, "Every parnasa I went into went bad. It's so bad that I am convinced that if I went into selling candles, the sun wouldn't set." That's what he writes in his song. So sometimes life looks like that. You know, you take a path and nothing seems to, every time you take a path, it's like that collapses. But our job is to contend with that and find a way to be happy and find a way to get around the challenges of life, not let life knock us down. V'yitron da'at, knowledge is better than money. Ha'chokhmah techayeh ve'aleha. Wisdom can give a person life where money cannot. So I think that's an application of the pasuk, and it appears many times in life. I'll tell you one more interesting story. There's a CEO that I'm friendly with who had his manager come to work one day, and the manager got locked out of the car. So the manager locked his keys in the car, and the manager comes to the CEO and says, "Look, at the end of the day, should I order a taxi, or will you be able to give me a ride back to my house where I have another set of keys, and I'll only take a taxi one way back, you know, to unlock the car?" So the CEO says, "What type of car do you have?" So the manager tells the CEO. So the CEO says, "That's interesting. My wife has that exact car, and I have an extra key here. Why don't you try it?" So the manager says, "You know, keys are supposed to be different. We're not all supposed to have the same keys, because then everyone could open one another's cars. So it's not so likely it'll work, right?" So the CEO says, "Yeah, I know that. But I have a key. Why don't you try it?" So the manager says, "No, I don't think you understand. Like, the car manufacturer, if they would give everyone the same key, then we would all be able to break into one another's car." So the CEO goes, "Yeah, I understood that." So the manager says, "So why would I try your key on my car?" So the CEO says, because sometimes two cars do have the same key. And before we spend the next 2 hours, me driving you home, you spending the money and taking the taxi back, there's nothing wrong with trying. It'll take you 10 seconds. But if we have the key, you might as well try. You guys know the end of the story, right?
It works.
It worked. Yeah.
Was it a French car?
Was it a French car? If I remember correctly, maybe I shouldn't say online. At any rate, I personally, as one who knows a little bit about locks, it could be that it's not that they were the same key. This story goes back about a decade and a half ago. But it could be that the cylinder worked based on pins. And sometimes if you don't turn it the whole way, so the pins all remain lifted. So then it could be that's why it was able to turn. But I never told the CEO that. He's fond of telling the story because he says, you got to try what you have before you say, I got nothing else to try. You have a key, try it. Okay, I think the moral of the story is right. V'itrondat. Wisdom can take a person further. Achokhmat techayev ve'aleh. Wisdom can take a person where money cannot. So that's Pasuk Yud Bet. Pasuk Yud Gimen. Re'e et ma'asei ha'elohim. Look at what God has done in the world. So this Pasuk really is a general theme. Chazal say, look and appreciate the sunrise. Look and appreciate the sunset. There's a world out there. And we are supposed to make blessings that are reactive. When you see something beautiful, you make a blessing. Wow, it's beautiful. You thank God for creating a beautiful world. You know, if you didn't chase the cholendan Shabbos, then your benching is a little different than if you did. If you... So the first understanding of the Pasuk is simply, look at what God's done in the world. You want an appreciation of God, you want to love God, you want to have fear of God. That involves taking a look. You could look at the big things, you could look at the small things. You could look at the stars and the galaxies, or you could look at the molecules. Another understanding here is, look at what God has done. Because if you look around, there are a lot of people with handicaps. It can be the person who is visually impaired, the person who is a cripple. You look at that, and one of the reasons God created that in the world is to teach us. Kimi yuchal letaken et asher iveto. Who can fix what God has? I don't know how to translate the word ivito other than God has destroyed. And this is a very scary interpretation of the pasuk because we once learned the Drashos HaRan, where the Ran says that when God created Moshe to be with a speech impediment, so Moshe says, you made me with a speech impediment. So the Ran asked, he said, wait, if I give him $1 million and give him $1 million and then I don't give him $1 million. Do you say I made him poor or do you say I made them rich?
Both.
I didn't make him poor. Just because I made you rich and him not doesn't mean I made him poor. If I give you $1 million and I give him $1 million but I didn't give the third guy $1 million, I didn't make the third guy poor. I just didn't make him rich.
It's necessity. It's like, you know, I give you a cell phone, or I give you a cell phone, or I give you health insurance, and I give you health insurance, but the third guy doesn't get a cell phone or health insurance. Now you can live without it, but it makes life a lot more difficult.
Again, not giving something, did I take something away?
No.
So the Ran says, the Pasuk about Moshe Rabbeinu says, Mi yasim ilim, who makes a person mute? So the Ran says, you could say God gives capacity to speak, but why do you say God makes him mute? You should say God gives, and then God doesn't give. What does it mean God makes him mute? So the Ran said, ordinarily, you're right. Ordinarily, we would say God gives many people the capacity to speak, and he does not give others. It's not that he makes them mute. It's not proactive. But with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was supposed to play the pivotal role in giving Torah, etc., then if he has a speech impediment, God made it so. It's not that God withheld speech, but rather God made him have a speech impediment. That's the Ran's interpretation there. Now let's come back to our pasuk, the way the Targum learns. The Targum learns God made people cripple. So that means the way the Targum's learning is, it's so to speak, even proactive.
He decided. It's not like in your example that you give to don't give to others, because God made everything. He decided. If God would be stupid, if God would respond,
okay. Okay. It just,
he can change that somehow.
I'm learning the pasuk from the vantage point of the person who has the impediment.
Everybody has something.
You talk to someone that's blind, you talk to someone who's crippled, they don't feel like everyone has something.
What was the exact line?
Ki mi yuchal letaken et asher iveto. Et asher iveto, the Targum learns, who can fix what God destroyed or ruined, other than God himself who ruined it? So that seems to say God ruined it, meaning...
In past tense? Wouldn't ordain that translation?
So he specifically uses the word ivut, which means to destroy, to ruin. What do you mean?
He destroyed, I mean, like he asked, it's past, it's present.
I think it's past. He's talking about that which Hashem has. In each case, we look back and say, look at what Hashem did to this person. But that gives us a lot of food for thought in terms of what's the perspective a person who has a blemish is supposed to have. Rashi learns a totally different shot in the pasuk. Rashi learns, "Kimi uchal letaken? Who will be able to fix et asher iveto? That which a human being has ruined post mortem." Meaning, "Re'e et maaseh Elokim." Take note of how God runs the world, that there is reward and punishment, because you have to realize, "Mi uchal letaken et asher iveto?" Who's going to be able to fix things if a person ruins them and doesn't fix them himself? We have a responsibility to realize we have to take care of things now. Biyom tova, I just want to do the next pasuk because it's connected. Biyom tova, yei vitov. On a day when you have capacity to do good, do good. That's one of the great downfalls we have. We procrastinate. How can you procrastinate on doing something good? Uviyom ra'ah, and then you'll see. You will merit to be one of those who see how those who do evil will come to their bad day ultimately. God created a world with correspondences. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
The same idea. This is the pasuk we saw in the Sefer Amidot. God made the world where you do something one way, you get rewarded one way. You do something another way, so there's payback the other way. Al divrat shelo yimtza adam acharav meuma. God made a world where we don't have to think after God what's going on here, because there is still a payback. So according to Rashi's interpretation, Koheles over here is coming to answer Eov's question. There's a world to come. If there's a world to come, so then there will be ultimate payback for the good, ultimate payback for the evil. And we said that on a philosophical level, that needs a lot of work. Once you've accepted that the Torah is true, so yeah, that's the easy answer for everything. It's not over yet. You don't see the full picture. There's still 50 million years to come. You're only seeing the 80 years you're living here. You don't realize this. That's 80 out of 50 million. Out of 50 million, okay, you'll see the whole picture. You'll understand what was the point of these 80. Okay, but that's, you know, then you could say anything. Because I don't see the 50 million. I have to believe you about the 50 million. I see the 80. I don't see the 50. Right? So we said, once if you've accepted the Torah, then if that's part of the Torah, you can accept that. But that's not a place to start a Jewish philosophy. Okay, so that was learning Pshat according to Rashi. Any questions? Yes.
An analogy about someone giving out money and millions of dollars and not giving out. I don't think it seems to work with God, because God doesn't just give him the money, he makes him as well. So if he creates someone with a lack, he's actively creating him. So if he creates someone and he has with a mazal to not be rich or the Chas v'Shalom or any other